Hey, friend, welcome back to the Freedom Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Sutherland, and today I'm excited to bring you a distinguished guest today. His name is William Holston, but he said that his friends call him Bill, and since we're all friends here on the podcast, we're going with it, Bill.
Thanks. Hi, friends.
Yes, it's my pleasure to welcome him. First, let me give him some intro, but I got to be honest, his bio is extensive, so I have picked out some key things that I think are really important for us to know. First of all, he just published a book called Uh-Oh, Entrepreneurial Business Moments, and honestly, I'm excited to read it. I just was looking at your website before, obviously, our conversation, and I'm excited to read deeper into that. Plus, he worked for Bayer, helping Bayer produce global brands, coming up with product ideas. And it sounds like you had a pretty unique way of doing that. I'll let you share maybe a little bit of insight into that. After he retired, though, he has now mentoring through the organization SCORE, which I know many of you are familiar with. They offer free resources for business mentorship. And I'm going to bet, Bill, that the people working with you are tremendously grateful for your donation of your time there, let me say. And last but not least, him and his wife Janet, while he was still working with Bayer, pursued a side hustle where they produced five games. His company there is called WorldWhims LLC. And I'm really curious to hear about your journey there, your personal journey, how that went for you guys, and what that was like. So thank you so much for joining the show today.
Lindsay, I'm very happy to be here. Maybe I'll begin by telling you why I'm interested in mistakes in the first place. And it begins with my own story when my wife and I launched our business. It happened, my background at Bayer was I was a brand manager for major brands like Bayer Aspirin and Alka-Seltzer and things like that. Then I transitioned into innovation, and I led workshops using a whole bunch of different tools. I'll talk about them later to help generate new business ideas and solve problems. But in my last 10 years at Bayer, we did the side gig. It started this way. My sister in Pennsylvania, her daughter wanted to do a Make-A-Wish Foundation carnival. And I'm one of six kids, and she invited all six of us to bring something to help them make money. And I thought, what a wonderful thing. It's in August, it's going to be hot. Let's get a dunk tank. And a dunk tank, you probably know, is something people sitting on a ledge, people throw a ball, hit a target, and poof, they fall into the big tank. So we rented that for this event. But 2 weeks before the event, the rental company called and told me that because of water restrictions, there was a drought in Pennsylvania that year. They're not allowed to rent us this dunk tank because it requires filling it with 500 gallons. And he said, "Do you want some other game, like a toss across?" I said, "No, we'll figure it out." Janet and I sat at our kitchen tables, scribbling things on napkins, and we were challenged with the question, how might we deliver that dunk tank experience without the 500 gallons? The result was a game we now call Pitch Burst, and it ha includes some of the similar actions. Somebody throws a ball, hits a target, but instead of somebody who's seated above falling into the water, a water balloon hung over their head pops and the water falls down on them. This carnival was an extremely good success. It was packed all afternoon, and they took away hundreds and hundreds of dollars for Make-A-Wish because of this invention. We had made it in our garage using plywood from Home Depot, a basketball rim from a sporting goods store, just cobbled it together. And the day after this carnival, we were sitting home being tired but proud we had helped. People started calling, "Hey, I'd love to use that game. Where can I buy one? Where can I get one?" And then my corporate business development mind went into action. We realized we could probably make some money or even a full-time business out of this. We first filed for a patent. When the provisional patent was issued, we then applied for an SBA loan and got ourselves started. The almost $100,000 we borrowed paid for producing 100 of these units. They were expensive. And marketing to the retail rental store trade, the people who would buy these to rent out to their customers. And we thought we were brilliant and this was going to be a big business and I could leave my day job and all those things. And we succeeded in the first 6 months through the winter. We sold and got rid of the ship 60 of these 100 first units we produced. And we got excited when the warm weather was coming. They're finally going to rent them out. They're going to tell us how much they love us. But after the first week, the phones rang a lot, not with compliments, but with complaints. The pieces are falling apart. The screws don't hold together. The logo panel fell off and it looks ugly. What did you sell me? And it was then we had our, I call it an uh-oh moment. We were in trouble because we'd spent all our money on inventory and marketing, had almost none left. And we realized we can't sell any more of these because as produced, they were not fit for purpose. The learning, of course, was that we had made wrong engineering material choices. We had made our own. We figured that that test that afternoon with the carnival was sufficient to know, but in fact, in commercial rental, they're not treating the equipment as delicately as I did as an inventor.
That
So
makes
blah
sense.
blah blah.
Yeah.
We survived, and I'm here to talk about it because we learned from these mistakes. We did borrow some more in the. We stopped selling. We deconstructed all the 40 units that weren't sold. We gave spare parts and even refunds to anybody who called and complained because if I sold it to you, I'm good for it.
Yeah.
But then we said we had a proposition which was a winner. We knew that. We had just done a bad execution of it to get started. So we invested more with a deeper loan into an engineer who'd redesigned it for us, the same principle out of steel. So the steel framed with plastic and aluminum panels unit we invented now more than 20 years ago is still in the market today. So problem solved, we just didn't get rich.
Is that something that you think could have been avoided knowing the tools that you have, like for example, in your book? Is that something that entrepreneurs could learn from in a deeper sense, by using the resources that they have today?
Yes, two specific tools and lessons come to mind. One is to map out your customer's experience. And in my case, it would be the rental store customer who bought my game. How do they handle? How do they store? How do they deliver? How do they pick up? How do they handle these things? So I could see that the rougher treatment was what I didn't plan for. And the other, it came from the corporate side more than anything else. I call it test and learn. Instead of going full in and producing 100 units, I might have created one or two with varying configurations, put them out to a customer or two, let them play with it, let them try to break it, and then learn from that and strengthen it. So those two are obvious in retrospect. A third is to think strategically. We owned a patent for a very intriguing and unique invention. Instead of trying to do the business ourselves, we might have tried to sell or license the patent to somebody who was already in this business and good at producing these games and knew the whole situation. So, retrospectively, lots of things. I won't go into detail on the other games we made as much, except to say we continue to learn, we continue to have these uh-oh moments one at a time for the second and the third game, and they were different lessons. All boiling down to might have been solved by doing test and learn and understanding our customers better. Just one other example, the second game we launched, and it's still out and it's still very successful, called Boom Blaster. It looks like a dynamite detonator. You've got a red box with a handle on top, and you're pumping it up and down. And while you pump it, it's an air pump pushing air into a stand across from you, where you're trying to be the first among two, five, 10 people racing to make the balloon pop. Lesson learned only the hard way. When you get a bike pump, you're expecting to use it for 5 minutes to make your tire get full, and then you stop using it. We put all of it cheap bike pumps in these units and expected that they would hold up. But when instead of the 5 minute then cool, when it's hours upon hours of aggressive pumping trying to win a race, heat builds up inside. I didn't know this before. Heat builds up inside, and the O-rings that are actually the things that force the air down through the tube, they get flaky, and then the flakes get into the tube and it blocks. So the calls to us were, hey, it stopped pumping. What's wrong? Man, oh man, if I had only learned to test and learn first, to think through that this usage of this equipment is different than it was designed for.
Hey, it's Lindsay, and I want to pop in here because I know how overwhelming it can be to get started building an online business. I've even spoken with people who've paid thousands of dollars for help from people who are truly experts in this, and they're still feeling confused about what direction is right for them or if their idea is even a good one. Listen, you don't have to guess or pray or hope or any of that. There is a way to test the market to ensure your idea is a good one so you can launch with confidence. And that's exactly what I show you in this simple 35-minute video training. I keep it simple because I know you already have so much swirling around in your brain. I'm not here to add more confusion because what you need right now is clarity. And that's what's in store for you in the short training called How to Tell If Your Idea Will Be Profitable. Access the video right now by texting the word freedom to 55444. Stop guessing and start taking strategic action. Text freedom to 55444. All right, back to the show. It's interesting you're going down that road, though, because I think it really ties into the mindset piece that we're going to tackle today, which is like how so many entrepreneurs, like you said it yourself. You made the mistake twice almost, right? You were like confidence. You had a false sense of confidence that the testing you had done was sufficient or that you would just figure it out as you go. I think that's something a lot of entrepreneurs are like, well, we don't always know the answer. We accept that, but we are willing to take the risk and we'll figure it out as we go. And, not taking the time to think through the what ifs or the perhaps this way, or look at that, or if this happens, then just take it on faith that things are going to work out. And we kind of, I think, in our American society too, is very much built on that whole, I don't know, concept of like, we're going to win the lottery. Like, this is going to be the one. There's this like a grand adventure. The little guy's going to succeed. We all have this ambition. Many of us do anyway. And I'd love for you to share how you are kind of investigating this philosophy now. Like, tell us about the study you're doing.
I'm in the middle of a 300 entrepreneur study that is looking for understanding of mistakes. I call myself a business mistake prevention specialist. I put that shingle out and I realized I need some substance to this, and I needed to learn from people beyond my own experience or the people I see from SCORE. What's the reality out there? And the survey that's in the field right now asks people to tell us first, in the last 12 months, how many slips, mistakes did you make that affected your business? And then the second question is, in the next 30 days, how many business impact mistakes do you expect to make? And it's striking that we've got like 160 answers so far. 80%, nearly 80% made one or more mistakes in the past year that affected their business, and like 25, 30% made five or more. So they're out there and people realize they've happened to them. But on the second question, we asked, what do you expect? What's your risk in the next 30 days? And almost everybody rates it low. No, so I'm reading, it's not me. The battery of questions we ask are, there are 12 questions, and they're around defining whether you are never or always or in between affected by stress, fatigue, relying on, we'll call it false, unproven assumptions, things like that. And then we will be able to create a profile of high, medium, low risk of something you can pay attention to. And of course, on my website, this tool will be there, as will be some simple tools you can do if you realize stress is your main problem and high risk area. What are the two or three things you can do to reduce yourself, reduce your risk of mistakes today because of stress?
Okay, now I'm curious, why only asking them about the next 30 days? Do you think the results might have been different if you'd have said like in the next 6 months or to a year?
Could be. This is for me just a benchmark to get started.
Yeah.
I hope to go much deeper and study more as we go forward. This is just my first time.
You were explaining it, and I was like, man, I'm just curious. And I could see because I'm thinking of the psychology. Like, if you'd asked me, I'd think, well, I mean, I'm pretty safe for the next 30 days. Yeah, I'm good. But I like what you were saying earlier about how, like, most entrepreneurs aren't aware. Well, we aren't always aware we're making a mistake. I mean, that's not, if you think about it, and really in boots on the ground, we're going through the motions. We're doing the best we can every day with the information that we have. And I think that's the key piece. You know, we're using the information we have. What you do is bring awareness to people. And I'd be curious if you can kind of help us. How can we expand our mind so that we can be thinking about information that's beyond our awareness of what we're in right now? Does that make sense what I'm even saying, or am I just
Kind
rambling?
of. Let me give it a try. I write in the book that the answer to not making mistakes, and it's not ever, but not making these blunders, is to think smartly and be more aware. It is as simple as that. But doing that is nearly impossible when you are worried about customers, your competitors, you're looking at cash flow, you're looking at your this month's bank loan, you're looking at dealing with your employees, all the things you have to. As a aggressive entrepreneur, making mistakes is not on there, but mistakes are part of any one of those at any given moment. So your question is, how might we think more clearly? First is to remember this episode, that be aware the next time you do make a mistake, what led to it? One of my tools is called Look in the Mirror, and it's available free on my website. It's a first chapter download. And it has you just take a blank sheet of paper and look down all of these factors: stress, fatigue, bad assumptions, things like that. And also then list, thinking of your last 12 months, the top three dumb mistakes you made that you wish you didn't, that you might have prevented. Then you're crossing on it becomes a easy table. You circle the causes of the three mistakes you made, and you begin to see patterns, and you can be more aware of when I'm stressed, when it's 4 a.m. and I'm exhausted, when I didn't ask for help. You can help define that, and then put a post-it on your door, on your desk, on your door. Don't forget that. It's as simple. It's never simple, but that's one way of reminding yourself to think about it before you act sometimes.
Did you in your survey ask people how much money their mistakes cost, or do you have any way of, like, kind of putting a poll, like a gauge on that?
No, my partner in the polling, once we got this in field, said we should ask about impact as well as incidents. So that's future learning for me.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Clearly, you would want to. I mean, dumb mistakes happen. I dropped my coffee cup and it spilled on the floor. Nobody died. But sometimes, if it spilled on the floor and then the liquid got onto your electrics and it shorted out your entire payroll system or a computer, one thing leads to another. It's the cow kicking over the thing that started the Chicago fire. You'd like to avoid the beginning of it, even if it seems simple. Of course, you want to avoid the disastrous ones that in themselves are terrible too.
Definitely. Absolutely. So as you're working in with entrepreneurs, you know, every day or every week, do you see any patterns? Do you see any patterns that are pretty consistent that you could bring awareness to right now?
One pattern that's obvious that I see in the past 2 years is many people don't, and this is not about avoiding mistakes, but it helps you there, don't have a business plan. They think that they want to go in this business and they jump into it, they buy something, or they get started, and they don't put on paper, what's my product or service? How is it differentiated? What's my business model? Where does the money come from? How am I going to market this? Who is my target customer? If you don't think those through, you can't be blamed for making mistakes because you didn't plan on it, but you can be blamed for really not understanding what it's about. I see, and I've helped many people with their business plans, and they go, aha, I didn't think about that. Who the customer is, how they'll differentiate. So the lack of a aligned a clear business plan is one mistake. Lot of startups, solopreneur startups.
Makes sense. I mean, you see somebody else doing something and making money, it's like, why not just do it? But now you're just in the noise. It's like, look at AI. I mean, it's blowing up right now, and there's becoming so many people. I had an opportunity, or I didn't have an opportunity, but there's a woman that I'm friends with on social media. She does AI photo shoots, right? So if you go to her website, she charges, I think, like $50 to get an AI photo shoot, and she charges $97 to teach you how to do it yourself. And she's always like, oh, look how much money I'm making. This is such a great business model, obviously, to sell her mini course, right? Which is fantastic. And God bless her. I hope she's successful. But then I got thinking about it. I'm like, how many people are going to jump on this? And now it's like everybody's doing it. It's just one of those things to think through, you know, like you're saying, how do you think through and know, is this going to be viable? How am I going to be different than the next person? So that's a good point that you make there, Bill. I like it.
This one more, and you mentioned that you downloaded my checklist. I offer it's free on my website. We'll get to the website at the end. I call it the $10,000 mistake checklist, and I compiled there eight quite common blunders that entrepreneurs can make. The first one on the list, I'm reading it now. It's the no one actually needs this syndrome, especially if you're inventing a new product or delivering a new service. If you haven't done the research and shown whatever you're trying to sell to real people and get some real feedback, you could be fooling yourself that something you love and think everybody will love, it just dies in the marketplace because there's no demand. The hurt there is you've invested lots of money or lots of time or lots of passion, and you don't get rewarded for it. We try to say goof-proof it, which is on that worksheet. It begins with map out your customer's experience. Talk to real people. Understand when they're if you're trying to sell a new type of mustard or something, go see how people use mustard. Ask them what they love about what they love, and ask them what they wish for that doesn't exist, and see where your new idea, whether it's a product or a service, fits in. Understanding that is critical to building a good business plan, but also to avoid that very specific mistake.
Interesting. I was just thinking too, about how you, I forgot to mention this in your bio, that you got to participate in the Creative Education Foundation's Creative Problem Solving Institute. Looks like the way I'm reading it, and I'm going to ask you to clarify, it looks like you got educated on how to help business owners problem solve creatively. Is that, am I getting that correctly?
Absolutely. Your
Okay.
Creative Education Foundation is fantastic. And I've gone to many trade shows in my day job. And that was the first one I went to. It's every June, there's a con there's a national meeting. They get together and they teach how to solve problems. There is a sequence of things to do creative problem solving. My big takeaway is looking at things through a different lens and always looking for the other right answer, especially when you're creating something or creating a business. The phrases I got that I've been using now, this has been 25 years since then, are asking questions in a different way or through a different lens. Instead of what's wrong with that, if you're looking at a problem, you might look at it a different way. You might say, how might we? And then you fill in a blank, which is going towards qualitative solutions rather than yes, no, black, white. And
Okay,
that
can I present to you a problem that I hear frequently from business owners? And we're
sure.
talking tradespeople, like service tradespeople, they're in the field, not necessarily online business people. But one of the biggest challenges that I've personally seen is learning how to scale from where it's just them and one other person, you know, or maybe a small team, to a larger team where they're having to rely on somebody other than themselves to execute and deliver customer service, in short. And of course, the cost associated with that and the risk, because then once you have a team, now you have to also make sure you have your marketing in place to be able to have enough business to fulfill the team. And so there's this huge, like, to them, it feels like a mountain. And oftentimes I see exactly what you're saying, and I wanted to use this to demonstrate, because I think as entrepreneurs, we're in the problem or we're thinking from within the, we'll say within the bottle, right? We only see the negatives. Well, if I go down this maze of the this path in the maze, I end up at this dead end. So let me backtrack. Let me try this one. And then I end up at this dead end. And we just keep seeing dead ends. And then we feel frustrated. And that's how come we feel stuck. So when we're in that space and that mindset, what might be some ways to reframe that to kind of think a little bit differently and to demonstrate your point?
What you're describing is, of course, very complicated. And as you build staff and do things to build up your capabilities, you're raising costs and raising pressure on yourself. Top of mind answer, because I haven't given it lots of thought yet, is find ways to do it in testable sequences. First of all, always try to look at it first through various lenses. I learned that Picasso and I think Dr. Seuss used to turn their paintings upside down to look at them from a different perspective before they finish them, to give them some insight. And if you use that analogy, how might you look differently at your business? Name one of the service businesses you would have as an example here.
This was person I was talking to was an electrician. He had injured his back. And so he said, I never imagined having to hire a team. It wasn't really something I ever thought about in my business. And now he's being forced to have to do that.
Okay. So the question set that I learned at Creative Education Foundation is how might we, or what are all the ways that we could? Instead of saying, I've got to hire somebody, you might say, how can I get the four jobs I can't do myself next week done without hiring, or period? How might I get them done if I can't do them myself? You might say, I have to hire somebody. There might be a gig somebody to do it else. You might teach the customer how to do some things and only go in person. You could be on site and supervise somebody. It's about possibilities.
I love that. That is my favorite, is the possibility. I think you're right. Just shifting your mindset to the what if and then the possibility opens the door for so much more creative answers right away.
There's one more dynamic that's one of the tools I write about frequently, and that is to always, so many times, and I did this when I was in the depths of my game business, when I was down to 100,000 and didn't know where I'd go. I wish then I told myself, find somebody to help you. Experts, mentors like SCORE or anybody else, SBA has them, state organizations have them, or even ask a naive observer like a 10-year-old or a fifth grader. Here's my problem. What do you think? And do listening rather than telling. Listen to what they said. Because when you feel very alone, you're really not using all the resources available to you. Some of them are free. An electrician can go to the State Association of Electricians or whatever it's called and ask, how has this problem been solved before? And everybody can suggest things. You might get, instead of one option, I have to hire somebody, you might have five options. And you can try out one at a time. In that person's case, it's an extended disability
Yeah.
that they'd like to do.
Well, it sounds
Then,
like the mistake we're making is siloing ourselves, like just believing that we're alone to solve the problem and believing that we only have ourselves to rely on for the answer.
I agree.
Yeah. What were you going to say?
I was just going to continue down the same path. What else? If you can't do the contracted jobs you have, at worst, tell them, look it up on YouTube. But that's another. And if it's not that, what's the equivalent of that that actually lets you still be in charge? You have to be creative too.
Yeah, no, those are really creative solutions. I mean, even though, it gets you a path where you can start thinking through, okay, what would happen then if I do this? And you just start tackling it. It's really good. And I like that because I think that is one of the biggest challenges that business owners face is that problem-solving ability. I know my business partner, she runs a little collaboration group locally in Florida, and one of the biggest reasons people come is to bounce ideas off of each other because, as a business owner, we're often very alone and other people don't understand what we're going through or how to think like a business owner. It's a very different position to be in. So, it's super helpful. That was really great. So, I am excited for people to connect with you, William. What's the best place for them to do that?
It's my name as a website. WilliamHolston.com, and I'll spell it HOLSTEN.com. And on there, if you visit it anytime soon, you'll find a red button that lets you download for free this $10,000 mistake checklist. And on that checklist, there's more links to my book and a lot of other things.
Yeah, definitely. All good things. And here we have it, folks. This is the business mistake prevention specialist. I love that. I saw that on your website. I was like, that is so clever and creative. And I just appreciate how much you are working to help people at that, that beginning phase. You're not so much there to help to have the answer to everything. You see where I'm coming from? So
Yeah.
much of the marketing in this world that we're in is, let me tell you how to get your next 30 leads. Let me tell you this, let me tell you that. And I just love that you're taking time to help people tune into the infinite wisdom that they have within themselves in a creative way so that they can always problem solve. It's not just to solve this one problem today. So thank you so much for your contribution.
Sure. My final thought would be, being aware when you're about to make a mistake. Maybe this discussion can help somebody, something spark, because fixing mistakes is expensive. Preventing them when you can is priceless.
Indeed, very much. I'm curious to see the results. I hope you publish them soon or like when the time is right. But when you publish them, will you share them with your people who've signed up? Because I've signed up on your website. So I'm curious.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
In fact, this a version, a do-it-yourself version of this test, this quiz, the 12-question quiz, will be. It's on my website now, but it's not active. Once I get the full information from the research, I'll populate it into that so that people can take this test themselves and see are they at low, medium, or high risk themselves of making errors. And then, of course, I'm happy to talk about solutions.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have you back on when everything comes together and we can like take the conversation next
I would
level.
love that because we are looking at subpopulations, including retailers, service providers, and lots of others. So there will be some relevance.
Good.
I'll reach out to you directly when that's ready so we can talk again.
Yeah, sounds good, Bill. I appreciate it. Excellent. Well,
Thank you,
thank you
Lindsay.
so much for joining the show. It's been a true pleasure. Everybody, go check out William on his website, williamholston.com. It's in the show notes below. And also, I will post your LinkedIn because I think you shared that with me as well. So we'll get
Yes.
connected up on LinkedIn. All
Thanks,
right.
Lindsay.
Have a
Have a
great
great
one.
day. Good week. Bye-bye.